We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is the Sooner Sports Podcast, your all-access pass to Sooner Sports. The Sooner Sports Podcast is presented by Allstate. Are you in good hands? And by Riverwind Resort. Riverwind Resort, the place to be.
Oh, mama, what a play!
Now, here's your host, Chris Plank.
All right, welcome into the Sooner Sports Podcast. We call our Tuesday edition a game plan, and we're loaded today. Coming up here a little bit later on, we'll get you ready for Sooner Baseball with Skip Johnson and their Media Day press conference. Kyler Murray made it official today. He's choosing the NFL. He is completely focusing on football, though. As we tape this, there's a report tonight that maybe the A's aren't done fighting. We'll talk to Dane Brugler from The Athletic, get his perspective on where Kyler could fall in the draft order, and obviously March 13th's Pro Day becomes more intriguing, as does the Combine. You know, we're sitting here post-OU Baylor hoops, and two of the three lead stories on SportsCenter are Kyler Murray tonight making the decision to stick to football. So we'll dive into that with Dane Brugler coming up in just a bit. But we start in Waco, where the Sooners had the lead late thanks to Christian Doolittle.
Doolittle, right wing. Gets a pick from Bieniemy. Bieniemy's got it. Back right side to Manic. Hits Doolittle down the lane. Jump stop. Pump fake. Up and good. He powered it home. And the Sooners lead it in Waco.
Do finished with 14 points, but it wasn't enough. Oklahoma ends up struggling down the stretch. They fall to Baylor 59-53. The Sooners have now lost five in a row, eight of their last 10. They'll square off against TCU on Saturday morning at 11 a.m. That shot by Dew put the Sooners up 51-50 with 5 minutes to go in the game. From that point forward, the final 5 minutes, the Sooners went 1-for-5 from the field, 0-for-3 from the free throw line, and turned the ball over twice. Lon Kruger loved the effort afterwards, but still knows improvement needs to be made.
Yeah, better fight, much better fight. I thought guys did a good job against the zone, made a few shots, you know, had an opportunity there, obviously late, that we didn't convert on, but like the spirit, like the fight, you know, and we haven't always had that. And I think from a confidence standpoint, this, obviously not handling some possessions late hurts, but I think they'll take some steps forward, you know, in preparation for the next one.
Drastically different looking game than the first time these two teams played, and it felt like you should have been ahead at halftime. But they just kept dumping in three-pointers on you there.
They made every, again, defensively, I thought we did a pretty good job. And anytime we helped, you know, down in the paint or helped on a drive, they knocked down anything that was open from three and did a little better job the second half against the three. But they've got a lot of weapons. They're a good ball club, and they made the threes in the first half.
You mentioned the fight. You're down 11 halfway through the second half, and you go on a 14-2 run to take the lead. It would have been real easy to fold right there.
For sure. You know, given that they battled. We used you know, a lot of fight in the first half, start second half, then to recover and regroup and knock down a couple threes during that time, which obviously is always a big key against the zone. And we haven't done that consistently, but, you know, a couple big shots there out of Matt. And I think Christian, you know, to cut into that lead. And, again, it's had some really good defensive possessions. Offensive rebound there late hurt us. Yeah. We had a pretty good shape and pretty good shape on the night with the boards, handling the not too many turnovers until they're late. But a lot of things to build from. But, again, we've got to play better for 40 minutes.
Offensive rebound got you in the possession arrow. Got you there late.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
That would have been nice for that to be pointed the other
guy,
way.
Guy gets the rebound and falls to the floor there. I'd like to have had that possession, uh-huh. You know, but they didn't see it that way.
Well, do you feel some positivity, though, coming out of this game?
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, this group, we've got to help them. We've got to help them more. This is on, you know, it's always on me. And I've got to help them with confidence. I've got to help them, you know, as a staff. You know, we've got to help them with, you know, get them in position to finish things better and try to make some shots.
Again, Oklahoma, TCU, Saturday at 11 a.m. Sooners fall on the road to Baylor 59-53. Sooners drop to 15-10. On the season. Well, big news broke earlier this morning, Monday morning to be exact, as Kyler Murray announced that he is focusing on football. That's right. The Sooner standout quarterback, the Heisman Trophy winner, released a statement on Twitter in which he made it clear that his focus is on the NFL. Here's what the statement said. Moving forward, I am firmly and fully committing my life and time to becoming an NFL quarterback. Football has been my love and passion my entire life. I was raised to play quarterback, and I very much look forward to dedicating 100% of myself to being the best quarterback possible and winning NFL championships. I have started an extensive training program to further prepare myself for upcoming NFL workouts and interviews. I eagerly await the opportunity to continue to prove the NFL decision makers that I am the franchise quarterback in this draft. As we tape this, that tweet has received now 55,000 likes and 16,200 retweets. An exciting time for Kyler Murray. So we talked to one of the draft experts, Dane Brugler, on our Big 12 Today show on SiriusXM Radio. That's channel 375 with Gabe Eichert. And I started by asking Dane, what might this change in some of the evaluations of Kyler Murray now that they know the scouts, GMs and coaches, that he is 100% committed to football?
You know, not much, just because we don't really know how NFL teams are going to feel about how he performs at the combine. Because the big thing will be, which, you know, is not going to be a 40-yard dash. We're not going to be, you know, privy to the information. But how does he do behind closed doors when teams put him on the whiteboard, when they interview him, when they really grill him about being 100% towards football? You know, does he love the idea of being a quarterback, or does he love playing quarterback? You know, is he going the football route? You know, because you know, he saw the attention he received as a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, or is he just trying to avoid, you know, the bus rides between Midland and Corpus Christi in minor league baseball? So I mean, there's so many layers to the Kyler Murray draft talk, and you know, how you fully evaluate him. And, you know, it's really just way too early to have any feel for where he's going to land. There's probably only going to be 2, 3, 4 teams who seriously consider him in the first round. But there will be some teams, and it's just a matter of the next few months trying to whittle it down and figure out those teams. I've, you know, talking to people around the league, I've heard Miami thrown out there as a possible destination. You know, Arizona has the number one pick, and with Cliff Kingsbury there, I don't think you can just completely rule it out, although it seems like a long shot, especially with Josh Rosen, who they drafted in the top 10 last year. But I was told don't completely just rule it out. So the Kyler Murray discussion, there's so many layers about, you know, what it being 5'9", 190 pounds, how his skills translate to the next level, where is he mentally in his development, and then which team is going to pull the trigger on a player like that and go all in on a guy that they really have to shape their offense around. So it's really fascinating draft talk and something we'll be talking about here in the next few months.
Dane, just curious. I know you've already dove all in on his tape. What do you think about his traits? What do you like? What do you dislike from what you've seen from what he put on tape last season?
Yeah, and it can be tough at times, you know, in the wide open Big 12 where, you know, he played behind the best offensive line in college football. You know, that played a factor too in terms of how much time he had back there to survey the field and, you know, wait for guys to come open. You know, the coverage that he faced in the Big 12 is much different than what he's going to see in the NFL level. But just from a, you know, a natural skill set perspective, I think he's a naturally accurate thrower. He's got a whip of an arm. You know, he can make the opposite hash throw with placement and, you know, not labor doing so. He's a pass-first quarterback. I know he's an electric athlete, and he can move around, but he has some pocket instincts. It shows an ability to avoid the rush, sense where it's coming, keep his eyes downfield, buy those second-chance throws, make off-platform plays. So I think there's a lot to like with him as a playmaker. I mean, not surprisingly, anybody that watched him play college football can see that. I think he's a very natural thrower, and I think he was a lot more accurate than I really expected. Now, again, playing in the Big 12, there's a big difference between that and going to the NFL level. And so, like I said before, those meetings and the interviews, just to find out where he is in his development and reading, breaking down coverages, understanding, you know, pre-snap reads and, you know, just identifying different keys when he's on the field, both pre- and post-snap, that's going to be a huge step in his development and where teams, you know, view him as a next-level quarterback. Trying to get a better feel for, you know, where he is in his football acumen and how high of a ceiling mentally does he have to, you know, handle the position and be the CEO of a franchise.
Dane, is it fair to say that in a lot of ways, interviews when you've had kind of some of the issues like he did on Radio Row with the Dan Patrick interview, they're going to be important for him because of that. But for quarterbacks, are these interviews more important than any other position at the Combine?
Oh, without question. You know, both from, you know, it's an intangible position. And so not just from, you know, how taxing the position is from a mental standpoint in terms of, what you know, understanding the full playbook, understanding protections, you know, knowing every route, understanding timing, and then breaking down what the defense is trying to do to you. Not only from that standpoint, but you have to be the CEO of a franchise. You have to be someone that's mature enough to handle that. Have the mental toughness to overcome failure and, you know, be okay. And Kyler Murray's a guy that, you could debate whether or not he's ever, you know, had to really experience that type of failure. At Allen High School, you know, he might have been the best quarterback in Texas high school history. And I know A&M didn't quite work out, but he didn't see a ton of playing time there. Goes to Oklahoma, wins the Heisman Trophy, didn't end well in the Orange Bowl against Alabama. So, you know, I think there's some debate there about whether or not he's really experienced failure and how he can do so at the next level. But there's no question. The interview process, which, again, we're not really going to fully understand how that goes with NFL teams. But when they put him on the whiteboard and, you know, they have the offensive coordinator sit down with him and, you know, draw out plays and say, okay, you know, what are you looking for here? You know, the defense is doing this. And, you know, just to hear Kyler go through, you know, just what he understands about the play and the breakdown, that'll be a huge part of where teams view him and just how much of, you know, where is he in his development? How much more does he have to go before he's ready to see live NFL snaps?
By the way, speaking of the offensive line, a very unique offensive line combine for the Big 12, specifically Oklahoma. They've got four of their five offensive linemen going to the combine. Dane, I don't know how much you've been able to go in depth, but with Bobby Evans and Cody Ford and then Drew Samia and Ben Powers, I mean, are these all guys that have a chance to get drafted? And how early could Cody Ford go?
Cody Ford's a top 15 player in this draft. He was dominant this year. You know, he's a grizzly bear with pads on, pass protection, as a run blocker. I mean, he does it all. Needs to clean up a few things, but it wouldn't shock me at all if he's the first tackle drafted, possibly as early as the top, you know, 8 or 10 picks. And then after that, I think both guards, Drew Samia and Ben Powers, I think both will be drafted. Samia, to me, is the better player. You know, looks the part. He's got that wide, broad-shouldered frame. Looks comfortable on his feet. Really powerful player. He was named the Big 12 Offensive Lineman of the Year. Shared that with Dalton Reisner. So, I mean, there's a lot to like about Samia as one of the top guards this year, maybe a top 100 pick. Ben Powers, I think he's a mid-round guy. You love the story coming from the JUCO level, kind of bet on himself. And, you know, he's not going to wow anybody with the athleticism, with the power, but he's just going to battle, and he doesn't lose a lot of those battles. And so I think, you know, those three guys will be the first drafted. And then, you know, we'll see about the left tackle. I think he's maybe more of a guard at the next level. But, I mean, regardless, it's pretty amazing what that offensive line at Oklahoma did this year. And, you know, something the best one is the center, who's not even draft eligible yet. So, you know, it's pretty impressive. They definitely deserve the Joe Moore Award this year as the top offensive line in college football.
So, again, Kyler Murray, 100% to football. Exciting times for the Sooner quarterback, which means his beloved sport of baseball will be left behind for now. The Oakland A's aren't giving up the fight just yet, according to some late reports tonight. But again, Murray seems pretty solid in his declaration. Hey, speaking of baseball, it's a big weekend for Kyler Murray's former teammates as the OU baseball team will open up their schedule at home. Real quick before we hear from Skip Johnson, the Sooners take on Cal Poly on Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Then Saturday at 2 before a Sunday game at noon against Cal Poly. The Sooners will then turn around and travel to Dallas next Tuesday to take on DBU. Skip Johnson sat down with the media to help give us some perspective on what to expect from the 2019 Sooner baseball team.
We had a tremendous first year as the head coach. Finished the year losing the championship, the regional, despite against a lot of odds. The attitude of the team was really good. And looking forward to the opportunity with the 2019 baseball season. Fall was really good, despite losing 60% of our pitching. And got a young baseball team. And it's going to, you know, baseball gives you an opportunity. And the obstacle in that opportunity is to be in control yourself one pitch at a time. And spring has taken over. Kind of going into our getting ready for next week on the 15th of February to start our season. And it's been really good so far. Knock on wood, we've kind of stayed healthy. Having some older guys in the middle of the field with two catchers coming back that were older and having Briley come back and Zaragoza in the middle of the field, it's good. And trying to move Levi to the starting row instead of relieving him this year. And Wiles will be back as the one starter that we have back from last year, going, you know, playing off that card a little bit. And going forward, it's going to be good.
Skip, what do you think is the strength of your squad this year?
I think the strength of our squad is probably depth more so. You know, we have a lot of depth. They're young, but it's, you know, where there's going to be bumps and bruises and some adversity along the way. And, you know, guys gaining experience as we go through. What I was really proud from last year's team is we got better as the year went, and we were really good at the end of the year. And, you know, what we talk about day in and day out is winning the last game of the season. That's what you practice for and you practice game-like for. So that's what we talk about in our vision of our program.
How do you plan on using Kate Kamali this year?
As a starter. He'll go in a row as a starter. Won't play much infield. We'll DH, but it'll be more as a starting pitcher.
How have you seen him evolve pitching-wise since last season?
You know, Cade was a really good athlete in high school, had some adversity his senior year, didn't pitch until late in his senior year, and then we bring him in and kind of use him as in relief because we wanted him to play an everyday a position for us. And this summer he went out and had a good early summer. Then we shut him down halfway through that and then evolved him as a starting pitcher as we go through the spring. Like, for an example, when they first got back, we started him with – when our first inner squad, he started with three innings. That was his throwing program over Christmas. And then the next start was, which was last Friday, to four innings, and then this next start will be this Friday to five innings, and try to add an inning a week as he goes through to see if he can maintain and bounce back from week to week. And he's done good. He's done that well so far.
Can you talk a little bit about Bradley, just his leadership and what you expect out of him this year?
I mean, there's not really an expectation. I think if you have an expectation, it ends up in failure. I think the more so is his leadership and of experience and him talking to the younger guys and making sure that they understand our practice plan. of being game-like and those guys going out every day and make him dwell on the team more so than an individual statistic. I think if he evolves his team, evolves himself within the team from the leadership point, I think that will help his numbers. You know, it'll make him get to his goal a lot faster.
Skip, but with all the pitching that you're replacing, how's that affected your job, if at all, just being the pitching coach from last year to this year? Do you feel like you're putting in more work, or maybe earning your paycheck more because you're having to develop a new staff and set up new guys?
No, I mean, that's what I do. I mean, with our coaching staff, Coach Van Hook being the defense and runs the offense, and Coach Overcash running the hitting, I can just, you know, come out of the tunnel and go to the bullpen and spend a lot of time there and try to keep making those guys better, because when they're younger, you can only take baby steps, and when they're older, you kind of can polish them a little bit in their game, and that's what we do mostly. I don't think it's earning your paycheck as much. There's going to be a lot of more ups and downs from the learning aspect of it. Like, for an example, we've been really harping on, hey, be in control with two strikes. You can't make them swing and miss. All you can do is throw it to the target. And that development process has been tough because, as you well know, I mean, you look at baseball today, it's people, all they want to see people do is throw hard and hit ball far. And so we're trying to teach them to pitch instead of, you know, hey, try to throw it 95 miles an hour. Throw it to a target, because that's the only thing you really can control. And I think the more you talk about it and the more you practice it and you practice it game-like and the more you can be positive is a big deal for those guys, because they're going to learn a lot faster.
You lose quite a bit of production in the outfield with Steele and Tyler. How's that group look for you right now?
It's been a work in progress. I mean, you know, we brought some guys in, some junior college guys in, and some freshmen in. It's going to evolve over the period of the first month, week to week, putting guys out there, doing a little more matchup right and left. And Brewster's had a really good day in inter squad today at two home runs. So I think going into last year, and we talk about attitude versus talent, we were really talented. And in the outfield, with Steele Walker and Kyler Murray, and Kyler Murray goes down, still in second base with a hamstring pull against the University of Texas, and Steele Walker wasn't in the lineup with a oblique pull, and Brewster gets the nod, and he has 35 at bats on the year, and he hits a home run against the University of Texas, and he steps on home plate and talks about, "Oh, my name is Joe. You know, my name's Joe." And I think that was it kind of just started spinning our team with that attitude. It was more about being a good teammate and just being a guy named Joe than it was being, Blake Brewster. And I think that really helped our team, and it kind of gave us an attitude going into the regional. And he's kind of carried that on. And, our team dinner, he won the Go Mitch Go thing on Saturday. We voted for him. And I think that's great, because he's shown a lot of leadership, and he's went through some bumps and bruises, and he'll go through them as a senior too, because of experiences, that he's lacked coming into it.
You mentioned Kyler a second ago. From your perspective, what's it been like with him making this decision, football, baseball? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, Kyler's a special athlete, and I talked to him, right after they played Alabama. And I just told him, I said, "Kyler, the biggest thing you can do is do what you want to do, because at the end of the day, when you do what you want to do, at the end of the day, I think you're going to put your heart into it." Looking at what I've got to solve is, I'd love to see him play baseball, but, football, he's real instinctive. I think football, he knows, because he's played it a lot more than baseball. And I think Kyler's a special human being when it comes to as an athlete. But the thing that is really unique in that row is what the University of Oklahoma did with a two-sport athlete. And you just don't see that. I mean, that's the story everybody's missing on it more than anything, how two head coaches came together and let this in the university, whether it's to get him to TCU, to get him back for football practice, and him evolve as a person, as that happened. And he brought a lot of leadership to our team because he loves to win, and his mindset is to win, and that's what makes him great at baseball and football. And baseball, you know, the first couple weeks, he'd go in there and struggle. He'd go 0 for 9. Well, he wasn't used to doing that in football. He was used to going 8 for 9 in passing. So he had to evolve in the mental game in baseball, and I think he got better as the year went. And, you know, he probably practiced with a team maybe 10 times all year last year. That's how special of an athlete he was.
Like, if it was 100% baseball, take football equation, what would his potential be?
I think it'd be like Andrew McCutchen's. He'd be a guy like that, you know, dynamic with his wheels, dynamic bat. You know, he played on dirt all his life, and he was getting better as a defender in the outfielder. Outfield, I mean, the thing with Kyler is he's going to work to be great, and he expects to win. So whatever team he plays on, he's going to only help those guys.
You talked about juggling things with Lincoln and working with him to make that thing work. What was the most difficult part about that for you working through those issues?
I think making sure that he got his defensive reps, not as much as his offensive reps, his defensive reps, because he needed to be evolve more as a defender than he did an offensive player. I think that was the biggest deal for me. You know, just didn't get enough defensive reps. And I think that was probably the most difficult thing. As far as, you know, him getting over there at 5:30 and getting ready to play was nothing at all. I was more worried about Kyler as a person because sometimes he'd get over there tired. He played a doubleheader, and we pulled him in the fourth inning. He said, "I'm not tired." We sent him up in the clubhouse. He'd lay in the, you know, just lay down on the couch, and I sent somebody up there in the sixth inning. He was already asleep. So, you know, you could, you know, he was such a dynamic athlete and hard-headed at times. You know, "I'm not tired. I'm not tired." And all of a sudden, he is really tired. Just more, you know, the toll it took on him mentally and physically as we went through the season.
Are you somewhat still trying to figure things out on the right side of the infield as far as second and first?
A little bit. I mean, we have options. We, you know, with Tanner Treadaway coming in from Seminole State, the second baseman, and we have Connor McKenna. He was a shortstop in junior college, and right now we've been playing Connor at second and, you know, putting Treadaway in the outfield because he's a utility guy and it matches up well for us, and keeping Briley at third. We played actually an inter squad today. We put Connor at third and put Briley at first. So those guys can move around a little bit. I think if you're a baseball player, you can play any position.
Coach, name one or two true freshmen that you believe can make a big impact on the team this year.
I think Wyatt Oates will make a big impact for us, for sure. There's no doubt about that. And the other freshmen, it'd be really tough right now to name that guy. Wyatt Oates is going to make an impact for us on the mound for sure.
Specifically, do you like about
what? Competitive, good athlete, three-quarter slot, strike thrower. I think that's the biggest thing. He can do a lot of things on the mound, can hold runners, can fill his position, throws a sinker. He's up to 93 miles an hour. Those things are good for us.
What do you see Nathan Wild's role, or what kind of steps did you want to see from him from last year to this year, and do you see him being maybe that guy to fill Urban's spot?
No, just, I mean, every game for us is a Friday night. We want to win every game, so if it takes 11 pitchers to win that one game, we're going to have to do it. I mean, that's what, you know, every game's a Friday night, so I think that's the thing that you know, what gets out of whack in the media is like the Friday night starters. One of your best arms, really. And there's no doubt. But a Tuesday game is just as important as a Friday game or a Saturday game or a Sunday game. So we're going to try to run four starters out there, being Cade Cavalli, Nathan Wiles, Levi Prater, and Ben Abrams. Ben Abrams is another freshman that's going to get some time early. He's a right-handed pitcher from Canada. that pitched with Team Canada in the playoffs they just had in November. I think it was in, I forget the country it was in, but I think they ended up getting third place and Team USA got first place.
When you lose as much experience as you are with this group, what did they need to transfer over from last year to continue and to build off the foundation of what you guys built the first year?
The attitude of the team, as much as anything, is just the attitude of being a team, because I thought that was how powerful we were last year. Those guys love to play with each other. They love to practice. And being, having that attitude was really big for us. And I think that's what the culture provides, you know, from our staff, our support staff, either our strength coach or our trainer or the coaches that are around. I think that's a big deal for us is how we go about our business on a day in and day out, because there's going to be some adversity because we're young. And what are we going to learn from that, adversity? I think that's a big thing for us is, if we're going to lose, what do we learn from losing? And that's going to be a big point. And we're going to lose confidence, or we're going to try to do something to get better day in and day out.
You think he'll rotate your catchers, or because you had all that experience with them?
Absolutely. I mean, you have Brady Lindsley and Justin Mitchell. One's a left-handed hitter, one's a right-handed hitter. We'll try to play the matchups and give those guys some rest throughout the spring for sure.
Did Lindsley play first, too? I mean, you playing him there at all?
We played him there in the squad a little bit. There's no doubt he can play first, he can play third, he can DH. Justin is probably not going to be in the outfield like he was last year, knock on wood. So it's part of what we had to do last year.
Any other questions? So Coach Overcash was a scout for almost 2 decades. What does he bring to the table when it comes to recruiting high school players?
The Midwest, he knows – a lot of the coaches in the Midwest. And plus, he understands what a guy that goes to college and a guy that needs to sign pro, and he also understands when you have a high pick that he can go in the house and talk to those guys about, hey, this is where you develop. I mean, I think 54% of the major league rosters were all college guys last year in the major leagues. So there's some development going on in college baseball, and that's what's big. I think we lose sight of that in college baseball, and that's what's really exciting about college baseball. It adds a different element. It adds the spirit to the game. When you go to a regional at Tallahassee and it's going crazy. I forget what they start, K-time, and it gets really powerful, and all of a sudden the guy hits a walk-off home run, and the place goes crazy. You just don't see that in professional baseball day in and day out until the playoffs start. But college baseball is about the spirit of the game, and it's about the University of Oklahoma playing TCU or playing Oklahoma State or somebody like that. And I think that's the spirit of the game that we sometimes lose.
Well, busy show tonight. Thanks so much for downloading, and thanks so much for those of you who subscribe, and thanks for listening. If you're not a subscriber, real easy to do so. Just click that subscribe link. If you listen to podcasts like I do, it's usually through Apple Podcasts. So we are the Sooner powered by Learfield IMG logo. It's the interlocking OU. That's the Sooner Sports Podcast. There's many Sooner podcasts out there, but that's the official Sooner podcast. And I might add, if you go to Soonersports.tv/podcast, you can just find the follow/subscribe button right there on the player. So, big week. I didn't even really get to talk softball here on the podcast today, but Patty Gasso and crew went on the road and started the season 5-0. We'll be, I guess you could say, live on the podcast. We'll be taping next week's edition of the Sooner Sports Podcast from St. Pete, Clearwater, Florida, as the 5-0 Sooners get ready to take on defending national champ Florida State. They've got a showdown with Kentucky and Notre Dame. And since we gave you the baseball schedule, here's what it looks like for softball coming up this week. Again, they started the season 5-0 in Phoenix. We're off to Clearwater, Florida. On Thursday at 3 o'clock, the Sooners will take on Kentucky. That game will be televised on ESPNU. They'll follow it up with a showdown against Notre Dame. That game will be on ESPN3. As always, we'll have every contest for you on the Sooner Radio Network. Then on Friday, doubleheader action, Florida Atlantic at 9 a.m. And then backed up with a showdown against the defending national champs, Florida State. The Sooners wrap up play on Saturday against Hofstra at 9 a.m. We'll be on location with Sooner Softball taping our Friday episode of The Tailgate. So until then, everybody have a great week. Thanks to Lon Kruger, Dane Brugler, and of course, Skip Johnson. Until Friday's Tailgate, Boomer Sooner, everybody.
This has been the Sooner Sports Podcast. Make sure to get all the latest episodes online right now at Soonersports.tv/podcast. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at OU On The Air.